Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
Everybody, and welcome to the long-delayed and largely anticipated episode 173 of Linux in the Ham Shack. We are glad to have you with us tonight. I am your host, Russ, K5TUX, and with me tonight is Bill, NE4RD, from Big Bargain Country, Montana.
Woohoo!
And we also have Cheryl, who sits across from me.
Hello, everyone.
And we're going to talk about some Linux, and we're going to talk about some ham, and we're going to talk about some ham Linux and Linux ham and all kinds of stuff. And we were recently on episode 57 of the Ham Radio 360 podcast. Came out a couple of days, well, yesterday, actually. That was kind of cool.
Sounded good.
It did sound good. He made us sound smart.
Yeah, I'm impressed.
Excellent post-edit.
Yeah. How do you get all those guys to say such good things?
I don't know. It's amazing how that worked. But I want to thank Kale and the group over there for a fun time that we had recording that, and hope everybody gets a chance to check them out at hamradio360.com. With that, we're going to move into the amateur radio topics for tonight. And the first one is kind of a sad day, and that is the Amateur Electronics Supply AES has announced that it's closing operations as of the end of this month, July 2016. HRO apparently is going to acquire some of their assets. The Milwaukee-based retailer has four locations around the country, including Milwaukee, Cleveland, Ohio, Las Vegas, Nevada, and Orlando. It has long been the nation's second largest ham radio dealer after Ham Radio Outlet. No reason was given for the decision, guessing lack of revenue. No reason was given to close the business. Effective at the closing of AES on July 28, 2016, all former AES locations, direct telephone numbers, and toll-free location numbers will be redirected to the closest HRO, so as not to disrupt providing service to the AES customer base, which is me, partly. Additionally, effective on July 28th, the www.aesham.com website will be directed to www.hamradio.com, also so as not to disrupt service for the AES online customer base. I always bought stuff from AES Ham because they generally had better deals than Ham Radio. But
I used to buy, I used to go up to the one in Orlando all the time.
Well, that's when you lived in Florida and when Orlando was actually up from you.
Yeah. Not anymore.
Technically, down from you now.
I probably haven't ordered from AES since the 90s, so it's been a while. I'm probably the reason why they're out of business.
There you go. All your fault. Yeah.
I have an antenna.
My one purchase every 3 to 4 years, right?
Right. I have an antenna on the roof. My 2-meter antenna that I bought from AES Ham is still up there. But it's got to come down because I need a dual banger. So, and I was going to buy one from AES, but now I can't.
Well, you can until tomorrow.
Well, I can until tomorrow. That's right.
I believe everything already forwards over to hamradio.com. So, yeah. So,
anyway, a link to the information on that will be in the show notes. But, of course, you can just go to hamradio.com to figure out where all of their assets have gone since it's now at hamradio.com, which I think their main store, their home office is actually in New Hampshire, I think, and that's my home state. So, plus for that, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think they're keeping that Milwaukee store open, too. So, that'll be the new HRO location. They're going to reopen and rebrand that store as an HRO brick-and-mortar shop.
The AES goes over to Ham Radio.
Well, that's all right. You'll still be able to go to hamradio.com and buy your ham radio gear if you want. So, there you go. All right, so what's this thing about hamdb.org?
Yeah, hamdb.org. This is brought to you by KK6NLW and KD6DL. Of course, I didn't get their names, but currently it's a free amateur radio call book that offers its data in four friendly formats, HTML, XML, JSON, and CSV. This is a no subscription fee, no account needed, no ads, no session ID, no lookup limits. Just free data in friendly formats. Their database is updated as often as the license information comes out from the various organizations from Australia, Canada, Germany, and U.S., and I think they're adding more as we speak. It's nice. It's a lightweight interface. If there's a link in the show notes right to it, but if you go to hamdb.org, you can query your call sign, and you'll see it in the list of recently queried call signs. And it's really nice having a nice lightweight service, because I just forgot to renew my QRZ service, so I'm going to probably write me up a lookup for HamDB from now on.
There you go. And I'll be willing to bet you can use hamdb.org to look up the names of KK6NLM and KD6DL.
Yeah, I bet you I could.
I bet you you probably could do that.
Could do it like right now, but
So another call sign lookup database. Do they have a published API? It says it's available in four different formats, but is it strictly from the web in those formats? Like it can generate output in those four formats, or yes. Does it?
Yeah, literally you can just type in hamdb.org/your call sign/ and then the format you want, XML, JSON, or CSV, and it will spit it out in that format. If you query somebody's name and your call sign in the application, it actually gives you links down at the bottom for those other formats. So it would take you a very simple, curl or whatever you want to go grab that information and parse it into your program.
So it's a RESTful API. So there you go. For people who know what RESTful REST is. And if you know what REST is, you know what a pain in the ass it is. it's great in theory to be able to just parse a URL and to have data generated out of an application that you can plug into your own application, REST API. But if you've ever had to deal with one, they're a nightmare. That's a little deeper than we need to go, I think. Cheryl, do you want to read the next one?
Sure.
Okay, good. Go ahead, put.
Kids crucial to the future of amateur radio.
And adults, too.
Well, that's very true.
I'm looking at you.
Yeah, members.
That's right.
And that was a scowl on my face, just in case you didn't see that.
They heard it loud and clear. So.
Okay, so back to the topic here. Kids crucial to the future of amateur radio. That was just one of the subjects that Stanwood Camano Amateur Radio Club, SCARC, covered Saturday, June 25th, during its annual Amateur Radio Field Day at the Stanwood Camano Community Fairgrounds. He said that SCARC was especially pleased to have over a dozen children attend, because one of the club's goals is to raise youth's interest in radio communication. Participation by kids will be crucial to the advancement of radio technologies for future generations, Lon said. And that came from bcts.info/z. No,
it came from eham. We probably should discuss the whole
thing. Yeah.
The funny thing is, the story was kind of, whatever. But if you go to the link, it's just like the headline, talks about kids, and the picture they have on the story is these two elderly gentlemen running the radio. And
well, I was like, kind of kids at heart.
Yeah, this doesn't make any sense. How can you do a story on kids and not have a picture of a few kids there standing by the radio? So I only included it because it was funny because of the picture. So, check out the show notes, click the link, go and look at it. It's kind of humorous. I expect a kid's story about amateur radio to have some pictures of kids, and it did not.
Well, there were a whole dozen kids there.
Yeah, a whole dozen.
A whole dozen.
Well,
right.
That's better than zero. So just look at it.
Three hands to count them all.
No, just two hands and one foot. You'd be fine.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, well, off air, we'll explain the whole URL thing to Cheryl, because I haven't bothered with that yet. So.
Just obfuscate the source for us to read it out.
So. Right. Yeah, so. I was just like, wait, that's our computer.
Yeah, there's a thing I'm doing, so we'll explain it.
Thanks for giving me that info before we started.
Sorry for not giving you the heads up there.
Yeah, I think it's been on for like three shows already. So.
Well, and I've missed like the last three shows. So
there you go. See what happens when you miss something?
Yeah, well, let's hear one.
I'll do the next one.
All right.
This is actually a kid's story, too. Summit's on the air while at Scout Camp, a scout ranch in Cimarron, New Mexico. Mike Cronover, 85A, did an 84-mile hike with his son, Roy, AE5EB, and his grandson, Logan, KF5GYD, where they planned on activating two peaks in the 136,000-acre scout camp. He had a crew of eight, two adults, and six scouts on this trek, which was classified as extremely strenuous, according to the camp's rating system. They worked 39 chasers on two peaks, and looks like they had a trip to remember. And they did have quite a few good photos there of the setups on the summits. And a lot of people are interested in doing those summits on the air. You know, this is a great experience for the scouts. I'm actually considering doing this in a couple weeks here when our scouts go up and try to summit Granite Peak here in Montana. So I might try to bring my radio up and activate the next peak over, because I'm not doing Granite Peak. Too scary.
Chicken.
So what is the elevation of Granite Peak?
I think it's like 12.4 or something like that.
That's above sea level. What is it above ground?
Well, I think you enter in, let's see, at East Rosebud at about 6,500 feet.
So you still got over a mile climb. So that's pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got to do, it's probably like a, I don't know, 15, 16 mile trek up to Tempest Peak, which will probably be what I'll activate. And that's where we'll set up base camp. And then the boys and the guides will go over the next morning and summit and come back that day to Tempest Peak. And then we'll hike back out to East Rosebud. So, yeah, it's really cool. Really cool opportunity to test all the gear and see if I really want to carry it in the future.
Well, do me a favor when they go up there and crest that peak. Let me know when they're going to be actually on the air, because I'd like to hit that if possible.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, none of the peaks up here, in the Beartooth have been activated for summits on the air, so it's kind of nice. Every peak is a new one. And it's just a matter of getting there, which is not terribly easy.
Right.
it's quite a hike. I think a couple of the easy ones I found is still like a 7 mile hike and 2,000 to 3,000 feet of elevation. So.
Right. And I'm not working soda or anything, but it would still be nice to get involved. So.
Yeah, yeah. So if I get that, I'll probably log it in. If you go to the Summits on the Air website, which I don't have linked here, but if you go to their Summits on the Air website, there is a whole list of activations and stuff like that too. If you ever are interested in it, they notify when they're going to be there, what time they're going to be on, and generally they're going to be, we'll be in the QRP frequencies. So, the upper parts of the single sideband band for like 20 and 17 and stuff like that.
A couple of useful websites for that: na-soda.org, North American Soda Activations, and www.sotawatch.org for relevant info on active sodas. Those should probably go in the show notes, so I might make a note of those before the end of the show. We'll see.
Why is it that everybody has mountains except for Missouri?
We have mountains, too, but none of them are worthy of mentioning.
Yeah, the highest point is Tom Sock, and it's like 1,700 feet.
It's like the Ozarks are down there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The Promenus is 500 feet on Tom Sock.
Yeah,
1,700. My house sits at 3,500 feet.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you're in the high desert up there, sort of the high plains.
Yeah, I don't even know what the elevation is.
I got a rim
there.
Right behind the house here at 3,800 feet. So
must be fun getting over that with the antenna, right?
Yeah, I don't get any Asiatic Russia or Northern Europe.
But you get a hell of a lot of reflection to the southwest, I bet.
Oh, yeah, man. I can work South America like gangbusters.
There you go.
Yeah, the elevation of Mount Vernon, Missouri is 1,211 feet.
I think you have to leave the state to go that low here.
You probably do. Yeah. All right. So shifting gears to open source topics, we have some information about Visual Studio Code, which has been released under the MIT license.
Microsoft, right?
Yeah. Ooh. For those that live outside the Emacs and Vim world or Vi world, the VS Code GUI-based editor is quite powerful and has access to tons of extensions that help make a programmer's life easier. Available for Windows, Mac OS, and Linux, it's now MIT-based, which is open source but not copyleft. We have a link to that information in the show notes if you want to try out the Visual Studio Code editor, which I'm guessing you use, Bill.
I do, and I've tried it out on all three, and it works exactly the same, which is amazing. So, it's another tool in the tool belt. I am still a big fan of VI when I'm doing console work. It's my personal editor of choice, and I have all the plugins and crap for that as well. So,
do you use it even when you're not being like an open source heathen and not coding your C# or Visual Basic and that kind of stuff?
No, not really.
All right. So this
Well, I have Visual Studio Enterprise. So, when I'm on Windows, I normally have to load that behemoth up. And, I'm working on pretty large projects now. So,
see?
But it's good. It works really well. It's still, I think they have some improvements to make on the launch time. It does launch, I think, a little bit faster in Linux. than a dozen Windows. No surprise there. And I'm actually, I have a build running on my Solus box here, so it runs really well there. And the Mac box runs just as well. And yeah, they all look great. No font rendering issues or anything else like that. So something done right by Microsoft.
All right. And speaking of Solus.
Yeah, Operation Go More Faster. Yeah, Solus is finally running a rolling release build as of last week. I'm trying to think. Yeah, maybe last week or maybe the earlier part of this week. I know they pushed it a little bit and didn't quite get it out. They were waiting to get a couple more packages into the repo. But as of right now, they're in a rolling release on Solus, and I'm anticipating a FLTK library for building all the FL Digi stuff coming out here shortly. I've been kind of chatting back and forth with the maintainer there, Ikey, over at Solus, and hopefully I can get him to build that out, because there's quite a few static links and stuff like that in the original build.
You actually packaged something for Solus, didn't you?
I haven't committed it out to the Git repo yet, because I was waiting to get a few more packages, but I've been practicing packaging stuff in there, and I wanted to get all the FL Digi stuff done before I started pushing stuff out, and I'm kind of waiting for that FLTK to be rebuilt by them, because they already kind of have it in the repository. It's just there's a bug ticket on it for getting rid of some of the static links, so it plays nicer down the road and stuff like that. I like Solus a lot. It runs great here on the Lenovo X220 that I picked up off of eBay, so it's great.
So how difficult is it to learn if you decided you wanted to actually package something for Solus? Because that was when we brought up Solus the first time, that was my biggest, I don't want to say gripe, but my biggest concern about Solus was the sort of lack of accessibility of prepackaged applications.
It is surprisingly easy. I tried to overcomplicate my very first one when I was doing a Hamlib, and I found out, yeah, I was doing it totally overly complicated. It's they have a very smart packaging system and building system. So, you just plug in some pretty simple variables like where to get the package from, the download, gets the little hash key. They even have some shortcut scripts that kind of build that stuff for you. And once you get the package built, it runs properly, then you can commit it to the Git repository and hopefully gets accepted and pushed out to the main repo. I believe you could have a separate repo for this stuff as well. There is an ability for the package manager to attach to other repos, a la like PPA or something like that. Not PPAs, but I'm just saying the same kind of way where you add that third-party package repo. But I haven't really messed with that yet, and I don't really think that's the way to go. I think it should be in the main repo.
Well, so you always you always want your code to be accepted into the main repo, right?
yeah. So, and there's not really any ham stuff yet, because this is still a fairly in flux building system, but there's a ton of packages. I mean, I'm pretty much set with mine except for the ham radio stuff. It has everything I would possibly need, so, and it looks beautiful. The Budgie desktop is beautiful, the default fonts are just, everything's beautiful. I mean, even the HexChat looks awesome. I wish HexChat looked this good in Windows, but it doesn't. So.
Well, Budgie has been Solus's big selling point up till now. So
And they're changing it from Vala to what the heck are they? C sharp or not C sharp? Sorry, C++ or something like that.
C++ or like what's the Mono, like the .NET platform or something.
Yeah, I don't think they're doing that. I think it's going to C++, but I'm sure somebody will call me out on that.
we don't say C-sharp around here. There is no C-sharp.
Yeah, they want it easier for extensions and stuff like that to be made for it, but it is super fast, and I'm pretty happy with it. I'm a Solus fanboy, sorry.
I was going to say there actually is no C-sharp, but that's not true. It's actually, there's no B-sharp and no F-flat, right? That's the music.
Correct. Right.
There's no B sharp and no F flat.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. See, I know something about music. Apparently not when it comes to what we play on the show, but I know something about music. All right. So I don't know anything about OnlyOffice, so I'm going to let you handle this one too.
Breaking birthday news. Now, OnlyOffice has never been so open as it is now. It's now AGPL 3. It's celebrating its 6th birthday today, and of course this was probably a few weeks ago, but I have a big exciting news for our open source community. We have updated the OnlyOffice server source code, making our web office more feature rich, easier to install. But first things first, yeah, the OnlyOffice document editors, you know, blah blah blah. There's a lot of notes in the show notes. I actually installed this on my Docker box in the closet over there just to try it out, and it's a pretty full featured office system, you know, kind of like, you know, Google Docs or anything else like that. It has just about everything you need, including the you know, the repository for the files and your editors for documents, Excel, you know, Excel like files, I guess you call them spreadsheets, and presentations. And it runs pretty quick. You can run this at home. You can run in a Docker image, obviously. There's already Docker containers for this. So you can try it out at your leisure and, you know, put it up on Docker node somewhere online or something like that. So it looks pretty cool, and it runs great.
Does it have a collaborative document editor?
You know, I think the documents, you can see multiple users in the documents. I didn't try that, but I'm pretty certain that it's already built in to do that. Yeah, so they have fast real-time co-editing, like in Google Docs. So if it's just like Google Docs, so you can see the cursor and the other person.
All right, well, there you go. That's another solution. We're actually trying, well, I say we. I am actually trying to move away from the Etherpad that we use, because Etherpad as a project has been dead for some time. It sort of devolved, I would say, into Etherpad Lite, which is a platform I hate and won't use. But OwnCloud has a collaborative document editor that we've talked about on a past show, and now this has come out too, which also has which I'm going to abbreviate CDE, collaborative document editor, like Google Apps, but where Google Apps isn't open source, this is. I'm looking forward to actually giving this a shot, and plus, since it already has a pre-built Docker container, that's nice.
Yeah, you can launch it up and test it out locally and see if it'll work for you. And yeah, I set mine up, and it didn't take much time at all to get it going and running. I mean, the Docker images are pretty complete, so it'll set you up everything you need to get it going.
All right, sounds good. Worth a look. Of course, links to information about OnlyOffice will be in the show notes, so you can check that out. Lots of features that it's got here. Viewing and tracking, version history, text art. Wow. Formula language, regional settings, adding, moving, and modifying available styles. Yeah, all kinds of very cool stuff. Does not require the installation of Mono, works with Node.js. So it does require JavaScript, though.
Like most modern things, right?
Right. Well, based on Node.js. A lot of stuff is based on Node.js anymore, so I don't know. Get used to it, folks. So that was all we had for our open source topic. So we're going to move into Linux in the Ham Shack. And this is sort of a free-form topic that we're going to have tonight. And this is about the Ham Radio Pure Blend, and I'm going to let Bill explain what he's talking about here, because you're asking some questions, and I guess you want some answers, and maybe I have those answers, and maybe I don't. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, so, you know, I've been trying to, you know, we were talking about the Pure build with Kale over there on the Ham Radio 360 podcast, and, you know, you definitely had a lot more information on it, and I was looking at it online, and you know, I was like, oh, well, the package, I guess you call them bundles or whatever, are available.
Meta packages. You know,
meta packages are available in Ubuntu and stuff like that. But, of course, they're terribly out of date because the repo is terribly out of date. And if you didn't want to run the Pure build or the Pure, I guess, stretch is what the most recent version of all that stuff is running under. I mean, how would you get your meta package to actually build all the more recent stuff?
That's kind of the problem with the meta packages, is they are references, they're links, pre-encapsulated packages that reference the pre-built binary packages. And I don't know that you can app source the meta packages, but even if you could, that would just be a source build of the binary packages as opposed to the, you know, installing the binary packages themselves. It'd still be based on whatever the binary package source was available in the current distribution that you have the meta package for, which presumably is Stretch. And in the case of Debian is notoriously slow about releasing updates to their packages because they want things to be fairly stable, even in the testing distribution. In the stable distribution, they're going to be super stable. And by virtue of being super stable, they're going to be super old because they have to be well vetted. and that's what winds up in the stable distribution. The testing distribution is a little more bleeding edge. You might have a little more current software in there. And, of course, the unstable version is going to have the most recent, the most bleeding edge stuff, and the most unstable. But I have not actually tried to install the meta packages under the an unstable version of Debian to see if that's even possible. I don't know.
Ah, okay. So, like, if someone wanted to get the pure blend, I mean, what would you recommend them doing? You know, which direction would you want them to go? Would you want them to get the Stretch? Would you want them to... Is there a live CD already for with Stretch on it, or what do they do?
Currently, there is not a live CD version based on Stretch. The live CD version is based on Jesse with the Ham Radio Meta packages pre-installed. You can use any version of Debian-based distributions that includes Ubuntu and Mint and stuff, by the way, based on Stretch to include the meta packages, because I actually did this on a machine I installed the other day, where I installed Ubuntu 16.04 on the machine and then did an apt install of the meta packages for ham radio, and they were all available.
Right, but they're still slightly out of date, right?
But they're going to be out of date because they're based on what's in Debian Stretch, not what's in Ubuntu.
Not Stretch, probably in Jesse, right? Because the Stretch meta packages I was looking at were like, you know, hamlib was up to 301 and stuff like that, and then the stuff I got on the 16.04 was not.
I can confirm that right now by going over to that machine and seeing what I get.
Well, that'd be interesting to know.
Well, hey, we've got time,
I didn't
right?
have any luck with that.
We can all edit this out in post, so let's give this a shot. I'm trying to remember which of the meta packages actually has hamlib in it. Is it rig control? All right, let me try that one. All right, so this is what I'm going to do live here is an install from Ubuntu 16.04, which is Xenial Zeras. And I'm going to install hamradio-rigcontrol, which works perfectly. And let's see which version of hamlib I get. Da, 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 da. It's actually installing something, so here we go. I'm waiting for it to actually get to the hamlib package. A lot of Python stuff. There's chirp, flrig, hamlib.
Yeah, they had an awesome set of tools, especially for like the SDR stuff.
Hamlib... Yes, it's Hamlib 2.
Okay, so it is the older one.
It is apparently the older one.
Okay, so
there.
So if you got a new, brand new rig, right, yeah, it'll still work sort of in a GIMP fashion.
I think you're dissing on the GIMP. Yeah, poor GIMP. Yeah, so apparently...
See, that's the GIMP, though. That's different.
Well, right, I suppose. Yeah, not the recursive GNU image... what is it? GNU image something processor?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, the software application for photo editing, that thing. All right, so...
X? Lightroom, what? No, oh, wait, never mind.
Hey, I like Lightroom. That's a nice application.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so yeah, buyer beware on this, right? If you want the latest, you might have to do a little... edgier building on your Debian build then.
Well, one thing we did talk about in a previous episode and probably many previous episodes is the idea of apt pinning. So even though you can install the meta packages from, you know, the current distribution if they're available, and then you can apt pin the unstable distro, for example, to your distro, and then you can specify that you want to install, for example, Hamlib out of the unstable distribution, and then it will install the latest one. And then when you upgrade the meta packages, it won't downgrade your later versions because it doesn't do that. As long as your current version is late, you know, as new or later than the one you already have installed, you won't have to worry about it being downgraded. So you can systematically upgrade things like Hamlib if you want to use Hamlib 3, for example, piecemeal, but yes, by default you're going to get what's available in the repo, which is generally going to be older.
So, and then if you install like a PPA that has that built, it would pick that up as well.
Whichever version is actually newer is the one that's going to be installed, but that of course is only available on distros like Ubuntu and Mint, which handle PPAs. Debian itself does not do PPAs, so
yeah, you have to add a package that does that though, right? You still can do a PPA on Debian, right?
You can do a PPA in a way.
Well, you turn it into Ubuntu at that point.
right. But yeah. you can set up a specific, like an Etsy apt, you can have a sources list and you can have a specific source that has like a third party distribution specifically for Debian specific packages, which is kind of like a third party reference to Debian packages. Not quite the same thing as a PPA, but it's the same idea. So you can then have access to things that are not in the standard Debian repo.
Cool. Well, yeah, my goal here with Solus is to kind of go through this list and see if I can build all these packages. So I'll keep you posted with how far that goes.
Well, I was interested in this, too, in your question, because I hadn't actually really explored it, because on my Ham Shack box, I'm actually using the Ham Radio Pure Blend as released for the Debian Jesse distribution, which is what I put on there. And then I've just sort of upgraded packages as needed, like FLDG and Hamlib, if they cause problems or if I needed the extra functionality or if there were bug fixes in later versions. So I just updated them, you know, as I needed. But as a good starting point, I would recommend the Ham Radio Pure Blend, whether you do it by the Jesse downloadable live edition or whether you get Stretch or some later version and just install the meta packages, or even use Ubuntu or Mint and install the meta packages, because they're available in any of those.
Yeah, it does give you a wealth of applications and a good swath of everything that is out there, you know, including stuff like, you know, PyQSO, Klog, TLF, and, you know, a lot of the programs we talk about all the time.
And a whole lot of stuff we don't talk about. That's I'm probably going to use it in the future for, like, all the stuff we've never even touched on before, because these are packages maintained by the Debian Ham Radio maintainers that we've either never used or maybe they're not super popular. It kind of goes back to the discussion we had a few episodes ago about the popularity contest. And I've decided that every time I do an install now, I'm actually going to participate in the popularity contest, because I didn't even really sort of understand what that was about. And so I just always said no. I thought this was kind of a phone home to the mothership, like give information about my computer to like the masters behind Debian kind of thing. And I didn't really understand what it was about. So I always just said, no, I don't want to do that. Now that I kind of understand what the popularity contest is, I definitely think everybody should participate in it, because it lets the Debian maintainers know what packages need to be actively maintained, actively updated, and what packages are actively used. And I think it's actually kind of important. So you can take that with a grain of salt. You do whatever you want as far as your own servers and whether you want to participate in the popularity contest. But now that I know more about it, I think it's a good idea. Anything to make Debian better, because there are so many distributions out there that are based on Debian. Anything we can do to improve it is a good thing.
Yeah, it'll just trickle around the whole ecosystem.
Right.
Well, cool. That kind of answers most of my questions. I kind of wanted to know a good clear direction to go with that, you know, especially if you were interested in getting the latest packages. You know, it does take, if you have any of one of the original builds, you know, 16.04 for Ubuntu or Mint or Cinnamon, you know, I guess that's Mint too. What are some of the other ones? Peppermint and
I don't even know how many distributions are based on Debian anymore. Yeah, there's hundreds of them probably. So
right, you know, like for like low level, for low powered laptops, a lot of people use that Ubuntu Mate and stuff like that, and you know, so they're going to be kind of on that older build level of packages. So you will have to spend a little extra time trying to find repos to pick up the newer packages. I know I was able to find them all for my 16.04 build. You know, I found a package. I think it was a PPA for Hamlib. And I think it's the same guy that does the Logbook of the World one, TQSL.
TQSL, yeah.
Yeah, I think he had the package in his repo for that as well, because when I added his repo, it upgraded that package, if I remember correctly. I'd have to check that out for sure. But yeah, that's really useful information.
Oh, good. Glad I could be of little help. So. Well, that was our free-form topic on Linux and the Ham Shack for tonight. We'll actually probably have something better next time we actually do this. It's been a rough couple of weeks for me, as it seems to be every couple of weeks, but it really was. It really was. Anyway, we're going to move on to some music for tonight, and I actually found kind of an interesting song. The guy reminds me of a young Bob Dylan, but he doesn't really sound like Bob Dylan. This is actually a really... What?
That's a good thing.
Yeah, was Bob Dylan ever young?
I think he must have been at one point.
Yeah, I guess. You go back far enough, right? Right.
So he's going to sound like Evil Reese little kid.
No. Like, I didn't say he sounded like Bob Dylan. I said he looked like Bob Dylan.
No. I was talking about Bob Dylan, though. Like, you know, the little kid's Fisher-Price recorder. Like, you're singing into that through, like, a megaphone or something?
No. No,
Bob Dylan, as a small child, sounded like that.
Oh, I'm sure he probably did.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay. Wow, never mind.
Sorry, I said it's been a hard week. Come on.
Cue it up. Please.
This is by Zach Linton. He's from Australia. This came out in April of last year. It runs about 4 minutes. I got it off Jamendo, as I get most things. It's called Maybe I'm in Love. We're going to hear it now.
Yay.
Okay, so that's Zach Linton with a song.
That's pretty good.
Called Maybe I'm in Love from April of 2015. A young man from Australia. So they actually put out some music. Cheryl seems to think her microphone is off, but it's not. You're tapping.
Can you hear me? No, you cannot.
Yes, I can. What'd you do? Hit the wrong thing?
No, I turned that down.
That's the wrong thing.
The wrong thing, yeah. I see that. So
there.
At least I remember to turn off mute.
Well, you're better than Pete. So, need to have an Andrew Dice Clay.
Yeah. Where's that rim shot at? Oh yeah, rim shot. There
you go. Yeah, I don't actually have that in the soundboard. I need to get that. I have sound bites of Pete though.
You have sound bites of everybody except for Bill and I, right?
Well, yeah. Yeah. I haven't gone through looking for stuff for you guys
yet.
We're
not important, so.
Whatever. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So Cheryl put this in the show notes, so why don't you go ahead and talk about the next thing?
Okay.
All right.
It's because nobody else pays attention to Facebook.
No, so. I pay attention to Facebook. I saw it.
Oh, did you? Okay. Yeah. LHS is now part of a new ham radio Android app. As of about 6 p.m. on Wednesday, July 27th, which was a few hours ago.
Like today.
Trevor Holyoke added us to his app that's a collection of podcasts covering all aspects of amateur radio through a Google Play app. You can use this app to either stream the podcasts or download and listen to them when you're away from a data connection. Do you want me to go ahead and read this or do you want to just put it in the show notes?
No. Yeah, we're not going to read the URL.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't even know what the name of the actual app is. If you wanted to search for it,
like Ham Radio Radio or something.
It's something like that.
It's called Ham Radio Podcast.
Okay, there you go. Thank you, Bill.
So I can click a link.
Yeah. No, we were actually having problems earlier.
Oh, we're still having problems, by the way, for like the four people who are in the chat room. They have upgraded the place where I store all our episodes has upgraded the server that we're on. Meaning there was an IP address change. So our feed is currently offline until your DNS updates.
Well, apparently it has updated for some people because somebody on Facebook a while ago was like, yay, I've got it now.
Well, so DNS propagation is a kind of nebulous thing. I actually had the timeout set to half a day. I have since changed the timeout to an hour just in case this happens again.
Yay.
So anyway, within 12 hours of 6 hours ago,
about 6 hours from now, yeah,
everybody will have the new IP address and all of that will be fixed.
Of course, nobody's going to hear this before that's all fixed anyway. So
except for the four people who are listening right now. So there you go. Right. So that was for them.
Okay.
See, this is the thing. People who aren't in the chat room and aren't listening live don't get this handy dandy
up-to-date
information. Yeah. Right. So
half the time we don't get the up-to-date info because we kind of sleep through this.
That's right. So anyway, that's pretty cool. So thanks to Trevor for putting that together. I'm going to download the app, even though I get my ham radio podcast from many other sources. But hey, why not? It's not going to chew up too many resources on my phone. So I can't actually do it on my phone because I have an iPhone. But
you'll have to use your handy tablet.
I do have an Android tablet.
So
I'll download it on there.
It looks cool. I looked at it.
Yeah, it makes it easy to find all the ham radio
Is Ham Radio 360 on there?
I didn't download it, and I don't know if it's on there or not. So
Ham Nation, I see Ham Nation, 100 Watts in a Wire, ARN, AmateurLogic.tv, boo. Sorry.
Wow. Really?
I'll install it on my phone while we talk about the next one.
Okay. You can tell us if Ham Radio 360 is on there, and then I'll stop dissing on Gary. I'm sure he's long since stopped listening to our show. So.
Well, yeah.
All right. We also got an email from Torsten, Delta Lima 1, Tango Hotel Mike. Always love hearing a call sign that's not from the United States. Send us feedback. So he says, thanks for bringing up the Pat Winlink client. I was looking for an open source client running natively on Linux for quite a while, so I was happy to be aware of that. Maybe one should mention that while the Pat client itself is free and open source and runs nicely cross-platform, it does not include a WinMore driver or TNC. I can work with the official Windows-only WinMore driver, and this seems to run under Wine. However, it is unfortunately still not possible to run WinMore on a single-board computer like the Raspberry Pi. Keep up the good work. I really love your show. He did all caps the love, so I had to emphasize. 7 threes from Torsten, DL1THM. P.S. Maybe worth mentioning in some future episode as a real open source alternative to WinLink, the PSK Mail project. And a link to the PSK Mail project will be in the show notes. So I was waiting for Cheryl to sneeze, so I didn't have to edit it out later.
Didn't happen. It'll be back in a few minutes.
Anyway, so maybe we will actually talk about PSK Mail, like, oh, I don't know, in the next episode. Because Bill said he'd never heard of it either.
I know it's there.
I thought you said you did WinMore with Pat.
Yeah, it does. It will do WinMore.
Okay, why does he say it doesn't then?
Does not include a WinMore driver TNC. I don't think that's correct. I don't think that's correct because it did have one.
Okay.
I will double check that and I'll report on that when we do the PSK Mail next episode. But, so I downloaded the Ham Radio podcast app. So here's everything that's in there. 100 Watts in a Wire, Amateur Radio Newsline, Amateur Logic TV, ARRL Audio News, Everything Ham Radio, Ham Nation, Ham Radio 360. Oh, there's Gary, Ham Radio Now, ICQ Podcast. That's a pretty good one.
Yep.
Linux and the Ham Shack. That's the absolute best one in the
list. Of course.
The Practical Amateur Radio Podcast, the Parpcast. I don't know if
that's not even produced
lately.
Anymore.
He's on and off.
Yeah.
See, and that was one of the questions he asked.
I don't think he's done one in at least a year.
Yeah. I did a couple blurbs for him here and there, but I didn't really.
I like the Practical Amateur Radio Podcast. I wish he'd do some more, but obviously life has taken him in another direction. So
what was his name? Jerry or something like that?
Yeah. Jerry Taylor.
Yeah. Jerry Taylor. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. He's a really good guy. QSO Today. That's another good one from the guy in Israel, 4Z1UG or something like that.
Yep.
The Rain Report, which I have never heard of. So that's one I'm going to check out now. And Solder Smoke.
I lost my nut for Solder Smoke a while back.
You know, I was listening to those guys, and I listened to all my podcasts at 1.5 or 2x speed. So it's kind of funny. Like, you know, I was listening to the Solder Smoke, and they sound just like click and clack there on NPR sometimes because the guy laughs so much during the episode. And I just thought it's just kind of funny because it reminds me so much of the guys at Car Talks, you know.
Right.
And it's kind of entertaining. It's not bad.
I hate to, I don't know, make a decision based on how people sound as opposed to how maybe they really are. But I can't stand someone who has an air of arrogance about them. And that's one of the things I don't like about Gary Pierce. And I got the same thing for Solder Smoke. So that's why I wasn't really interested in that. But
yeah. Yeah. I didn't really get that from them, but I don't know. Maybe I'm looking at different things.
It's I'm sure it's just me. So
it's just you.
It's just me. Yeah. Anyway, check that out. Link, of course, will be in the show notes. I'm going to download it. Bill's already downloaded it, so here you go.
I'm downloading it now.
She's downloading it now, so there you go. All right. So thanks, Trevor. We're all going to check that out, and I'm sure many other people will as well. We also got a comment on episode number 172 from Johnny, one of our longtime listeners and commenters, N4JEK. He said, you mentioned Dolphin in this episode and running game emulators on a Pi, so I thought you might like Recallbox. Anyway, I love the show. I looked at Recallbox. You can do a Google for it, and it comes up with recallbox.com, recall with one L. And when I did that, the domain was dead. Now, again, that could be me. Bill, would you like to confirm that recallbox 1L is dead or alive?
It's alive.
It's alive. You suck. It's loading on my computer now.
Why is it that this never works for me?
It's on my computer. We're on the same network.
I know. Oh, and there it is.
Look.
It's a retro gaming platform. Recallbox offers a wide selection of console and game systems, from the very first arcade systems to the NES to the Mega Drive and even 32-bit platforms such as PlayStation.
All right. Yeah, and it loaded for me when I loaded it that time, but when I tried to load it earlier, it did not. So anyway, recallbox.com 1L will be in the show notes, of course. Because it actually does work. Who knew?
And it's being fixed in the Etherpad even as we speak. Right.
And I'm typing it in the Etherpad right now. So. It's amazing how things can happen so quickly. But anyway, thanks, Johnny, for that information. That'll be interesting information for me because I love retro gaming consoles and emulators, so I'm going to be checking that out. And anybody else who likes them, I'm sure will be checking that out as well.
Speaking of that, we still need a MAME machine.
I'm working on it. I'm working on it.
Whatever.
Yeah, I am. Really. All right. Well, instead of griping about our lack of a retro console, why don't you tell us what the recipe this week is?
All right. Well, first off, there was a recipe in the Ham Radio 360 episode. So if you want to hear what I shared with Kale, you should definitely listen to that episode. And you can hear us talk about all kinds of Linux versus ham radio versus whatever stuff. So anyway, this week my recipe is, just call me lazy in the summer, I don't like to turn the stove on, I don't like to turn the oven on, so I want recipes that are easy to fix and require very little time in the kitchen. This is one of those recipes. It's a dessert, and it's one of my very favorite pies in the world, and it's for key lime pie. You need a prepared graham cracker crust, 3 cups of sweetened condensed milk, which will be about 2 cans, I believe, 1/2 cup of sour cream, 3/4 cup of key lime juice, that's very important here, and 1 tablespoon of grated lime zest. And you warm up your oven to 350, which is 175 degrees centigrade, and mix all that stuff together, dump it in the pie shell, and bake it for about 5 to 7 minutes. Don't brown your pie. Take it out, chill it, and eat that puppy, and it is very, very good. And that is the recipe this week. And the recipe, of course, will be in the show notes.
Yeah, I made that one on that you mentioned on the Ham Radio 360 for 4th of July, and that's great.
Yes.
Yeah, Cheryl actually made 2 of them.
Yeah, 2 9x13s of them. So.
Well, I thought one was a 9x13, one was an 8x8.
Yeah, that's right. So
no, I did the strawberries and the blueberries together.
Yeah,
that's the one Cheryl did.
And then I made an American flag on top.
That's what Cheryl did too.
I was going to take a picture and send it to you, but I just
I don't even think. Well, actually, did we get a picture of it? You may have.
I may have got one.
Yeah, but. Yeah. We had a little bit left over, and people were we had some leftovers from the thing, and every day the next day I was asking people who wants to take some leftovers home. And everybody was, is there any of that cake thing left? I was like, yes. They're like, I definitely want some of that. And everybody, one girl was like, I ate it 2 days later. That stuff was amazing. And I was like, all right, whatever. So
yeah, it keeps getting better the older.
Yeah,
it got.
The longer the graham crackers can absorb the moisture from the Cool Whip, the better it gets. So and see, this is baiting people to go listen to that Ham Radio 360. Yes,
which is perfectly fine.
That show.
Yeah. So.
Well, I didn't eat the cake you made, the icebox cake, the first time or the day you made it, but I ate it the next day and it was fantastic. So anytime you can refrigerate something like that and let the flavors sort of meld. It's excellent.
Yeah, it's better. I'm not a big blueberry person. So even though I wanted to do the American flag type look with that one, I prefer it with just strawberries.
I think with the blueberries, you have to kind of let those blueberries soak in some sugar overnight first and then add them to the recipe.
Yeah, they were a little tart.
What was the thing we had in the drink?
If you want to keep the sweet theme going, definitely you'd even do that with the strawberries, I would say, overnight, a cup of sugar on top of that stuff in a bowl, let it sit overnight, and then And then load her up. I mean, yeah, it'd be nice and super sweet.
Make
and,
an appointment with the dentist before you start eating it.
Yeah, definitely. Don't be a diabetic and eat this recipe.
Oh, yeah, trust me. I am a diabetic. Yeah. Yeah.
So get that pump.
Yeah, exactly. What did you start to ask me?
Oh, we had that drink at the order the other night. What was the thing? What was the cherry? Oh, it was a cherry. That's right. It was a true maraschino.
Yeah, a true maraschino cherry. Yeah, there was a drink. Russ and I went out last week and tried a new restaurant. And we were there during happy hour. So, of course, we were checking out all the different drinks they had. And they brought this drink out. And it was a apple cider or something based drink. I don't remember what it was. But the garnish on it was what looked like a huge blackberry or blueberry covered in granola. Russ is not a big granola fan, and I'm willing to try anything like that. So our waitress walked back by, and we're like, okay, so what is the garnish? And she's like, oh, that's a true maraschino cherry. It was pitch black, but, oh, it was amazing.
Yeah, it was like rolled in graham cracker or something.
Yeah, and brown sugar or something.
Yeah, brown sugar. Yeah. I mean, yeah, this is a place that has, like, definitely very snooty type drinks, but it was worth giving it a try anyway. So anyway, we should probably not talk about drinks.
Anyway, yeah, so you know, you don't want to have the booze on the side type podcast.
We did that a couple episodes ago when you were gone. So. And I couldn't remember that there was Coke in the Irish coal miner. I think I fixed that in the recipe, actually, in the show notes. So.
Yeah,
but, we take our meals with a drink, right? You know, as long as you can put it in a cup, I'll eat it.
I take my I take my drinks with a meal, but so
yeah, the restaurant that we tried out also had like goat cheese rangoons instead of crab rangoons, with a blackberry dipping sauce or a blueberry dipping sauce. And cashew chicken, which if you're from Missouri, you understand Missouri cashew chicken.
No, Springfield cashew chicken. Springfield, it's not even Missouri.
It's not even Missouri. It's Springfield cashew chicken, which is breaded chicken with a cashew sauce, no vegetables or anything like that.
It's just covered in green onion, cashews, and an oyster sauce.
Yeah.
It's just
a thickened oyster sauce.
It's nowhere else in the country except within about a 20 or 25 mile radius of Springfield, Missouri.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist outside of that zone. Yeah. So,
but they've got, you know, cashew chicken skewers, and I'm trying to remember what else we had. But, you know, they had tons of great and unique, you know, upscale food, I guess, you know, not typical McDonald's type stuff.
It's these folks built an upscale hotel in the middle of downtown Springfield, Missouri, something that Springfield, Missouri hasn't really ever seen before.
Well, and the building was an abandoned building. So
the building was an old Masonic temple that they converted into sort of a luxury hotel with a upscale restaurant and stuff. So it's just kind of new for around here, so we thought we'd try it out. But their happy hour is actually pretty reasonable, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, we actually, a friend of ours is a musician, and he was playing there that evening. So we went, what the heck, and walked in. They're like, hi, it's happy hour. We're like, oh, even better.
Yeah. And since no one who lives around here is actually going to hear this, we might as well just say it's the Vandevort Hotel.
Right.
And it's their in-house restaurant called The Order. Yeah. So. But if anyone actually does hear this and for some reason winds up in Springfield, Missouri,
definitely
you should probably
check it out. Yeah. They have a hallway of bathrooms downstairs.
Oh, the bathrooms. Yeah.
Everybody that goes into the bathrooms has to take a selfie. And the bathrooms are the perfect place. The walls are a dark, charcoal-y gray color.
Well, they're actually maroon.
They're maroon.
The back wall is maroon. The rest of the walls are charcoal or black. But the mirror is actually surrounded by a wall of lights. So when you take a selfie, not if you take a selfie into the mirror, but if you take a selfie away from the mirror, you actually have a perfect backdrop. It actually creates a picture of you with essentially no background, a perfectly black background.
Oh, wow.
And so it's become a thing to actually go there and take a selfie.
Yeah, the friend
because the illumination is just perfect.
Yeah, the friend that's the musician actually went down and did a song in the bathroom.
Yeah, he actually recorded a video in the bathroom because
yeah, I was like, all right, everybody that we know has gone there, selfies are posted to Facebook. I was like, all right, if nothing else, we have to go and just go to the bathroom and do the selfie.
We'll do profile pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it was definitely a cool experience. So,
all right. Well, anyway, you want to do the social media roundup, and you have a disclaimer this week, apparently.
Yes, I do have a disclaimer this week because of one person.
No, I saw the person is not that hard to pronounce just because he's Russian. Come on.
No, well, he's Ukrainian.
Well, Ukrainian. Okay. Right.
But, yeah, well, you can, I don't read that language, so I had to search around to find his actual English name.
I think it's actually awesome that you got the translation out of the Cyrillic.
It took me a lot. No. I actually had to go to, like, QRZ or something to get, I don't remember where I got the translation, but via call sign, I got the English translation of the name, and but it took me like an hour. So, anyway, I'm going to do this disclaimer now. I'll never do it again. Next time, I'll just apologize or whatever, but because I know I've massacred other names in the past. So, I would like to throw out this disclaimer now to cover anything I've done in the past and anything I do in the future. And my disclaimer is, number one, I'm a native English speaker. Number two, I'm from the Midwest, specifically Southwest Missouri, and most folks refer to us as, quote-unquote, hillbillies, so we have our own form of English here. And three, I wear bifocals, and I'm staring at tiny text on a screen and typically speaking faster than my eyes and brains are processing stuff. If I massacre your name while reading it, it is not intentional. Just chalk it up to me being a blind country girl who doesn't encounter many unusual names on a day-to-day basis. End of disclaimer.
Okay, so now I'm just going to soundbite that and put it at the beginning of every time you read.
All right, great. Perfect. So anyway, this week for our donations and subscriptions, on our list we have Jonas Rulio, Jeremy Hall, Michael Connolly, Harrison Kyle, Scott Pettigrew, Bob Yerke, Paul Griffith, Ronald Ikey, Johnny Kinsey, Brian Smith, Robert Halliday, Ben Schramm, Michael Aiello, John Clark, Rob Branch Dash, Edward Donnelly, Donald Gever, Alan Wilson, Steven Sainer, Dylan Engel, Jason Marinero, which I always get wrong.
Except that time.
Except for that time, yeah. James Blocker, Doug Ryder, Michael Lasky, Darren King, Petro Karsakis, Donna Farron, Gary Horlick, Bill Stearns, Bill Piotr, Robert Pitts, and Jeff Cannell. On Facebook, we have Ihor P. Sokorchuk, which UR3LCM. If I massacred your name, I am so sorry. Joshua Reinertson. Charles Michael Long. That's it, I quit. On Google Plus, we have Wilson Hines, Mike Myers.
Mike Myers, woo!
Chris Morda and World Hack. On Twitter, we have at WomenHam2, at KD8NOM, at GW0TQM, Lyman Dugan, at KG0BP, at ChurtCRC, and at KC7EQO. Nobody joined us on YouTube. Nobody joined the mailing list. And there were no merchandise sales this week.
All right, we made it down to the end.
Woo!
Yeah, yeah. And I know that Myers is not
to read it this time.
Right, I know that Mike Myers is not the Mike Myers, but hey, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You never know.
Make him feel special. There you go.
So, all right. So, I would have said Ihor P. Sikorchuk, but
I don't know
if that's right or not. That's just the way I would have said it. So.
Well, right, but if The Facebook name is the one in parentheses. What would you have said to that?
I would have said, I can't read that. It's in Cyrillic.
UR3LCM.
There you go.
UR3LCM. Yeah, I can read that.
Thanks a lot for joining.
Right.
Like.
Uniform Romeo 3 Lima Charlie Mike. That's how I would have said that.
So. Gotcha. See, I tried to do better than that.
All right. Well, anyway, I think that's about it. I'm going to hit the outro button, and we're going to get on out of here. So there's the music. And you can become an LHS ambassador. You can visit the website for upcoming episodes and information on how you can represent Linux in the Ham Shack at a nearby LinuxCon or Ham Fest. We also love feedback. You can email us at info@lhspodcast.info. You can comment on an episode on the website. You can post on Google+, Facebook, or Twitter. Or leave us a voicemail at 1-909-LHS-SHOW. That's 1-909-547-7469. You can visit our IRC channel anytime you want at #LHSPodcast on Freenode and subscribe to our mailing list. Show merchandise from coffee mugs to t-shirts can be purchased at www.cafepress.com/LHSPodcast. You can also help out the show by clicking on the sponsored ads in the right-hand column of the homepage. You can listen to us live every other Monday night at 8 o'clock Central Time. That's Tuesday at 08. That's Tuesday at 0100 Zulu time. In the summer, 0200 Zulu in the winter time. Our recording schedule and countdown timer to the next episode are on the website. Please check out http://lhspodcast.info for everything you ever wanted to know about the show. Thank you to all of our listeners live and quasi-live, past, present, and future. We appreciate each and every one of you. So this has been episode number 173, recorded live from Studio 3D in Southwest Missouri and from somewhere in Big Bargain Country in Montana. Woo! And we'll be back at it again in a couple of weeks' time. So thanks to everyone. Hope to see you again soon. Bye-bye for now.
Bologna have a long history.